Escape Pod 92. February 8th, 2007. Today's story, The Boy Who Yelled Dragon, by Mike Resnick.
Hello, I'm Steve Ely, and welcome to Escape Pod, once again sponsored by Dreaming Mind Hand Bookbinding. We've got another kid's story this week. Like our last one, it's about dragons. Hey, when you've got a good theme, roll with it. This is probably a good time as well to mention the long-overdue revival of the Escape Pod Classic feed. For those who don't remember from early last year, Escape Pod Classic is a secondary podcast that re-releases episodes from our archives that we consider to be family-safe. Not necessarily simple stories, and they might still have some heavy themes, but probably stuff a smart 10 or 12-year-old would be able to enjoy. We launched this feed early last year, and I was very diligently screening the episodes and stripping the old intros out, and that turned out to be a lot more work than I initially thought, and we fell way, way behind. So we're kicking it up again now. We're not altering the episodes at all this time, so you'll get the old nostalgic intros. And I was smart enough to get help. We're happy to welcome Paul Herring to the team as the Escape Pod Classic maintainer, so he's the one making it happen. You can find all that at classic.escapepod.org. And just like Escape Pod, you can subscribe to it in iTunes or with your favorite podcast client. I'm really happy about this, and I'm happy to be putting out more stories for younger audiences. We'd love to keep getting more. While we do run quite a few adult stories here, the fact is that most people don't come into science fiction and fantasy as adults. There's a saying in fandom that the golden age of science fiction is 13. I don't want to wax cliche here, but I do believe that being exposed to good stories when you're young, and coming to love stories, makes for an entire life that's, well, maybe a little more thoughtful, but at the very least, less bored. And with that in mind, we're pleased to present this week's story, The Boy Who Yelled Dragon, by Mike Resnick. The last few times we did a Mike Resnick story, I kept getting reports of people crying because they were too sad. I'm just about positive that that's not a danger this time. Mr. Resnick is, according to Locus, the all-time most award-winning author for short science fiction. He's also now the executive editor of the Baynes Universe online magazine, which is well worth checking out. He lives in Cincinnati when he's not traveling in Africa or going to conventions. This story first appeared in the anthology Young Warriors, edited by Tamara Pierce and Josepha Sherman. The story is read for us by Matthew Wayne Selznick, author of my favorite adolescent superhero novel, Brave Men Run, which you can hear via podcast at podiobooks.com, or buy in print or ebook or CD at bravemenrun.com. Matt also has a new podcast, 5-Minute Memoir, at 5minutememoir.com, and has a lot of projects related to do-it-yourself media. So put on your Sunday armor and don't fall asleep during the joust. It's story time.
The Boy Who Yelled Dragon, a fable by Mike Resnick. Teachers and parents have been using it to teach children a lesson for centuries now. It's become a part of our culture. Everybody knows about the boy who yelled, "Wolf," just as they know about the three blind mice and the little Dutch boy who put his finger in the dike and the day Michael Jordan scored 63 points in a playoff game. But would you like to know the real story? It began a long, long time ago in a mythical land to the north and west, which, for lack of a better term, we shall call the mythical land to the north and west. Now, this land was the home of exceptionally brave warriors and beautiful damsels, and occasionally they were the same person, since beautiful damsels were pretty assertive back then. Each young boy and girl was taught all the arts of warfare, and were soon adept with sword, mace, lance, bow and arrow, dagger, and the off-putting snide remark. They were schooled in horsemanship, camouflage, and military strategy. They learned eye-gouging, ear-biting, kidney-punching, and, since they were destined to become knights and ladies, gentility. So successful was their training that before long enemy armies were afraid to attack them. Within the borders of the land, justice was so swift that there was not a single criminal left. It would have been a very peaceful and idyllic kingdom indeed, except for the dragons. You see, the land was surrounded by hundreds of huge, red-eyed, razor-toothed, fire-breathing dragons, covered with thick, scaly skin and armed with vicious-looking claws. And just as 50 years ago, a Maasai warrior became a man by slaying a lion with his spear, and today, you are hailed as an adult when you can break through Microsoft's firewall. Back in the days we are talking about, a boy or girl would be recognized as a young man or woman only after slaying a dragon. Okay, you've got enough background now, so it's time to introduce Sir Meldrake of the Shining Armor. Well, that's the way he envisioned himself, and that's the name he planned to take once he had slain a dragon and found someone who could actually make a suit of shining armor. But for the moment, he was just plain Melvin. Tall, gangly, a little underweight, shy around damsels, more worried about pimples than mortal wounds received in glorious battle. His number had come up in the draft, and it was his turn to sally forth and slay a dragon. He climbed into his older brother's hand-me-down armor, took out the garbage, kissed his mother goodbye, but only after he made sure none of his friends were watching and snickering, climbed aboard the family horse, and armed with lance, sword, mace, and a desire to show Mary Lou Penworthy that he was everything she said he wasn't, he set off to slay a dragon, bring back both ears and the tail, or whatever it was one brought back to prove he had been victorious, and become a knight, rather than a skinny teenaged boy who couldn't get a date for the prom. Soon the city was far behind him, and before long he had crossed the border of the land itself, and was now in unknown territory. He hummed a little song of battle to keep his spirits up, but he was tone-deaf, and his humming annoyed his horse, so finally he fell silent, scanning the harsh, rocky landscape for dragons. He found himself wishing he had paid a little more attention in biology class, so he would know what dragons ate when they weren't eating people, and where they slept, if indeed they slept at all, and especially what kind of terrain they like to hide in when preparing to ambush young men who suddenly wish they were back home in bed looking at naughty illuminated manuscripts beneath the covers. At night he found a cozy cave and, lighting a fire to keep warm and ward off anything that might want to annoy him, like, for example, a pride of dragons, or did they come in flocks, or perhaps gaggles? He sang himself to sleep, which kept his spirits up but almost drove his horse to distraction. When morning came, he peeked out of the cave, just to be certain that nothing lay in wait for him. Then he peeked again, to be doubly certain. Then he thought about Mary Lou Penworthy and decided that the mole on her chin that had seemed so charming only 2 days ago was really rather ugly in the cold light of day, and hardly worth slaying a dragon for. The same could be said for her eyes, not blue enough, her lips, not rosy red enough, and her nose, which seemed to exist solely to keep her eyes from bumping into each other. One by one, he considered every young lady of his acquaintance. This one was too tall, that one too short, this one too loud, that one too quiet, and, to his surprise, he decided that none of them were really worth risking his life in mortal combat with a dragon. In fact, the more he thought about it, the more he couldn't come up with a single reason to seek out a dragon. It was a silly custom, and when he returned to the land, which he planned to do the moment his horse calmed down and stopped looking at him as if he might burst into song again, he would seek out the Council of Elders and suggest that in the future, the rite of passage to adulthood should consist of slaying a chipmunk. They were certainly more numerous, and what purpose was served by slaying a dragon anyway? His mind made up, Melvin climbed atop his steed and turned him for home, and found his way barred by a huge dragon, 20 feet high at the shoulder, with little beady eyes, thin streams of smoke flowing out of his nostrils, claws the size of butcher knives, and a serious case of halitosis.
"Why have you come to my kingdom?"
demanded the dragon. "I didn't know dragons could talk," said Melvin, surprised.
"I don't mean to be impertinent,"
said the dragon,
"but I could probably fill a very thick book with what you don't know about dragons."
"Yes, I suppose you could," admitted Melvin. He didn't quite know what to say next, so he finally blurted, "By the way, my name is Sir Meldrake of the Shining Armor."
"Are you quite sure?"
asked the dragon.
"No offense, but you look rather rusty to me."
"My own armor's in the shop, getting dry cleaned," said Melvin, starting to feel rather silly.
"Oh, well, that explains it,"
said the dragon charitably.
And since we're doing introductions, my name is Horace, spelled H-O-R-A-C-E, and not to be mistaken for Horus, the Egyptian god.
That's a strange name for a dragon, said Melvin.
Just how many dragons do you know on a first-name basis?
Asked Horace. Counting you, one, admitted Melvin. Just out of curiosity, how many men have you encountered?
The downstate returns aren't all in yet, but so far, rounded off, it comes to one.
Horace paused uneasily.
What do we do now?
I don't know, said Melvin. I suppose we battle to the death.
We do,
said the dragon, surprised.
Why?
Those are the ground rules. You meet a dragon, you slay him.
That's the silliest thing I ever heard,
protested Horace.
I meet dragons all the time, and I've never slain one. In fact, I plan to marry one when I'm an adult and sire 20 or 30,000 little hatchlings.
Had you someone in mind? Asked Melvin, interested in spite of himself.
Nancy Jo Billingsworth,
said the dragon with a sigh.
The most beautiful 17 tons of wings and scales I've ever seen.
He looked at Melvin.
How about you? Have you picked out your lady yet? Always assuming you survive our battle to the death.
I'm playing the field at the moment, said Melvin.
So you can't get a date either,
said Horace knowingly. It's these darn zits, said Melvin, trying not to whine.
Take off your helmet, and let me get a good look at you,
said Horace. You'll be disgusted, said Melvin. Everyone is.
Try me,
said the dragon. Melvin removed his helmet.
God, I would kill for zits like those,
said Horace fervently. You would? Said Melvin. Why?
Look at this hideous smooth skin on my face,
said Horace, holding back a little whimper of self-loathing.
Let's be honest. Nancy Jo Billingsworth winces every time she looks at me. She'd die before she'd go out with me.
I know exactly how you feel, said Melvin sympathetically.
It's not just my face,
said Horace, a tear rolling down his smooth green chin.
It's me. Whenever we choose up sides for basketball, I'm always the last one picked. When it's girls' choice at the dance, I'm the only one who's never asked.
They don't even let me in the locker room, Melvin chimed in. They say I'm just wasting space, and the girls draw straws in the cafeteria, and the loser has to sit next to me. Before long, the young man and the young dragon were pouring out their hearts to each other, and because no one had ever listened before, they continued until twilight.
Well, we might as well get on with it,
said Horace when they had finished their litany of misery. Yeah, I suppose so, said Melvin unenthusiastically.
I want you to know that if you win, I won't hold it against you,
said the dragon.
No one will miss me anyway. I haven't got a friend in the world.
That's not true, protested Melvin. I like you. Horace's homely green face lit up.
You do?
Melvin nodded. Yes, I do. He paused thoughtfully. You know, I've never had a real friend before. It seems a shame that one of us has to kill the other.
I know,
said the dragon.
Still, rules are rules.
Suddenly, Melvin stood up decisively. Who says so? Horace looked around, confused.
I think I just did.
Well, I'm going to break the rules. You're my only friend, and I'm not going to kill you.
You're my only friend, and I'm not going to kill you either.
Horace paused, as if considering what to do next.
Let's kill the horse. At least we'll have something to eat.
Melvin shook his head. I need him to get home.
I kind of thought we'd stay out here and be friends forever,
said Horace in hurt tones. Oh, we'll be friends forever, promised Melvin. And as my first act of friendship, I'm going to save your life.
That's very thoughtful of you,
said Horace.
But don't be so sure I wouldn't have killed you instead.
I'm not talking about me, said Melvin. But every week, a new candidate is chosen to go forth and slay a dragon. And next week, it's Spike Armstrong's turn.
Who is Spike Armstrong?
Asked Horace. He's everything I'm not, said Melvin bitterly. He's the captain of every sports team. He's the most handsome boy in the land, and even though he has the brains of a newt, all the cheerleaders fight to sit near him in the cafeteria.
I dislike him already,
said Horace. Anyway, if he finds you, he'll kill you, concluded Melvin.
So you're going to fight him in my place?
Asked Horace.
I call that exceptionally decent of you, Melvin. I'll always honor your memory and put flowers on your grave.
No, I'm not going to fight him, replied Melvin. I wouldn't fare any better against him than you would. But any time I know he's sallying forth in your direction, I'll go to the far side of the city and tell everybody that a dragon is approaching, and Spike will immediately head off in that direction, and you'll be safe.
That's a splendid idea,
enthused Horace.
And whenever Thunderfire goes out hunting for a man to eat, I'll do the same thing to him.
Thunderfire? Repeated Melvin. Horace grimaced.
Females swoon over him. He's got lumps the size of basketballs all over his face, and his flames shoot out 10 feet, and he just struts around like he owns the place. But I'll see to it that he never finds you.
You know, said Melvin, I like having a friend.
Me too,
said Horace.
My mother says one should always seek out new experiences.
Their ruses worked. Spike Armstrong never did slay Horace, and Thunderfire never did eat Melvin. As for Melvin and Horace, they continued to sneak away and meet every Saturday afternoon, except when it was raining. And although neither of them ever did become king or marry the damsel of their dreams, they each had a friend they could trust and confide in, which in many ways is better than being a king or marrying a dream. And that is the story of the boy who yelled dragon. Of course, when dragons sit around the campfire at night or tuck their children into bed, they tell the story of the dragon who yelled boy.
And that was our story. It's a hallmark of a good piece that it leaves you thinking about it afterwards. And in this case, I kept thinking, human dragon interleague basketball. I don't think Mr. Resnick's written that story, so it's wide open. So we're sponsored again this week by Dreaming Mind Books. I've talked a lot in the past about their blank journals and what a fan I am. Another thing they do is custom printing and bindings for your own stuff. What sorts of stuff? Well, Valentine's Day is pretty much on us. Don Drake tells me that last year he bound a collection of about 100 love poems a fellow had written for his gal. He also did another poetry collection. This time it was a gift for the guy who'd written them. His girlfriend had had them bound as a Valentine's Day gift for him. And just recently he bound a collection of email, which chronicles how an Australian guy and a California girl met at a Harvard business seminar, fell in love, and eventually got married. How sweet is that? So, for the sorts of things that matter most to you, that you just want one or a few really nice copies of, this is a great way to celebrate your passions. Again, you can find Don and his work at dreamingmind.com. A few weeks ago, we ran Jack Skillingstead's evolutionary post-human coffeehouse story, Being There. Again, most people enjoyed it. Rob said, yay for a happy, non-cheesy ending. And Hazamel said, it had a lot of emotional realism that rang true. I think our most positive comment came from ADR1, who said, this story was just beyond awesome for me. In recent years, I've grown more convinced that the universe is in fact here to help us with our experience, and we are in the driver's seat. I really felt the author was trying to introduce this truth in as popular a manner as possible. We also had a fair number of people who felt that the story fell a bit flat for them. Leet Minion said, the conflict seems more told than shown. And several said the ending felt confusing or forced. My favorite comment of the week comes from Monty Grew, who said, my personal bias may be showing through, but I'd say that opening day at Disney World would be a subject befitting Pseudopod for the psychological torment it would inflict. This was also another case where we had as many comments about the intro as the story. The intro in this case was about the poor circulation state of the major science fiction magazines. I'll have more to say about the magazines later on, but a few people posted that the intro itself was helping to spur them to subscribe to magazines that ran the kinds of stories they wanted to read. So thanks to all of you, and I hope you enjoy them. Escape Pod is a production of Escape Artists Incorporated, and is released on a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial No Derivatives license. For the best in horror fiction, check out Pseudopod at pseudopod.org. But do be aware, the stories there are adults only. For Escape Pod Archive CDs, check out poddisc.com. And again, for an age-appropriate feed of the best of our archive, Check out Escape Pod Classic at classic.escapepod.org. Our music is by permission of Daikaiju. Their concerts are well attended by humans and dragons, but with separate dance pits. That was our show for this week. Our closing quotation this week is anonymous, though it's clearly a spin on Tolkien, and you've probably all heard it as advice while you were growing up. Do not meddle in the affairs of dragons, for you are crunchy and taste good with ketchup. We'll see you next week, and have fun.